Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
Good afternoon. I am Angelo Ponzi, and I am the host here at the Business Growth Cafe. Thank you for joining us this lunch hour. Each week, we do select from a menu of topics that could impact business growth to discuss with experts in a wide variety of disciplines. And today at the cafe, I'm excited to have Wayne Pinnell, managing partner at Haskell White, a leading CPA and business advisory firm, to talk to us today, a little tongue-tied here at lunch today, about a variety of business-related topics. And Wayne, welcome.
Thank you, Angelo. Glad to be here.
Before we get started with our discussion, why don't you tell us a little bit about Haskell and White and the roles that you guys play, especially from the business advisory and helping businesses stay on the straight and narrow to continue to grow?
Certainly, I'd love to do that. So Haskell and White is a 30-year-old CPA firm based in Irvine. We have a second office in San Diego, about 85 people strong with 10 partners. Traditionally, we've provided audit and tax-related services to clients in a variety of industries, starting with real estate, which was the bedrock of the foundation of the firm, have since grown out to handle clients in a variety of industries, med tech, manufacturing, biotech, lots of real estate, obviously, continues to go there. And we work with middle market companies that are privately held, publicly held, and a variety of nonprofits as well.
Okay, fantastic. I've been reading a lot of your blogs recently, and certainly have enjoyed them. And one in particular talks about what I think the goal of many small businesses are is to someday be fortunate enough to sell their business. Now, I've had that opportunity to sell my business several years ago. Unfortunately or fortunately, I'm not quite sure, it came on us really quick. So we were neophytes and really didn't have the time to plan and probably do it properly and contact people like yourself. So let's start there in our conversation. In your blog, you call it the six P's or key areas to focus on in preparing for a sale. I'll just read them off real quick, and then you can expound upon all of those. Products and services, profits, process for delivery, practices, people, and certainly planning to be prepared. So let's start the conversation there.
Sure. It dawned on me to prepare this blog at one point. I was just driving home trying to think about the things that I talked to a number of clients about throughout the work week, really getting this down to, if you're going to plan for a sale, what key things, if you put the shoes on the other feet, so to speak, would the buyers be looking at? And so when I just kind of came up with something that made sense to get six P's, had to work the words around a little bit. But clearly, the business that you have in the first place, what is the business you have? What's the unique proposition that you are providing or fulfilling in the marketplace through your product or your service? Because okay, that's going to be a huge value driver in what somebody might be looking to bolt on to their existing business or create a vertical situation that they might be looking at. Certainly, as you're developing products and services, you want to be generating profits, because investors are looking at you not necessarily on your history, but where you're going, which is going to be based on the track record and looking at where you intend to take that business, because they are looking for a return. Wouldn't you expect? They're looking for a return on the investment, and that's going to come from future growth and profits. And processes for delivery can cover anything for, depending on your business, it's how you get your product to market.
Okay.
Is it distribution through public warehouses? Is it distribution through distributors or a network of salespeople? Franchising, whatever it might be, that's going to have its own value drivers as well to keep you there. And number four was practices. It's all about the organization and the governance of the company.
Okay.
How well is it run? It's into the management team. Actually, I'll keep management team for people, but it gets into how you run the company, how good the controls are for the company, the enterprise systems that you have in place.
Is culture part of the evaluation as well?
Yeah, culture will be an intangible value that certainly somebody's going to look at and see if your business will blend well with them. And a lot of that culture is going to be in that fifth P with the people.
Okay.
You know, it's often said that companies look at three important things when they're buying somebody else. It's management, management, and management. But that's all the people. And so it's really looking at how that company's been structured. And for a small business, one way to look at it is, if the owner was to walk away tomorrow or retire, can that company run without him,
right,
or her? Is that company been so well built and so well positioned through its practices and procedures that the people can just go without the founder?
Right.
And that last one, planning, We'll come back to that one because I know it comes up with where you want to go on timing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting you talk about people. What I was fortunate to sell was an advertising firm. And during the negotiation, part of it, or the big part of it, was me and my partner, that we had to go on with the deal and continue on with the deal for a minimum of 2 years. We actually were there 8 years because they said clients come and go.
Correct.
And therefore, we can't bank on the book of business because you are and you maintain that, but it's what you did to grow this business that we want to retain. So a lot of times in these deals with small businesses like I was, I mean, do you find that the retaining the owner for a certain limited or period of time is always part of the deal?
I always hate to use the word always never,
okay.
But it is often there, certainly in a service business, because the service business is tied to that owner or that professional's relationships and the actual services they provide. It'll take a period of time to wean off those relationships, if you will, and pass them to the new owner. Products, the product type company may not need the owner to stay in as long. I had a client years ago that provided services, and we get into this period of post-sale employment. Somebody like yourself who owned the company for a number of years, this one client actually referred to the fact that they wanted a 5-year period of employment, and he was willing to do 3. And when he recited it, he said, "I can go to jail for 3 years." And we had to really break that down a little bit because he wasn't used to having a boss. And actually, like you, he stayed there 8. So,
yeah, it was interesting because obviously I went from the CEO of the company to executive VP, so I was not the number one guy anymore. And it's a long story, so we won't go into that right now. But, when people are planning and thinking about how to prepare for a sale, I mean, I've got to believe if you're a business owner, you're not thinking of someday as an exit strategy and preparing. So is there a typical time frame that you should say, when should I engage you to start thinking about planning and selling the business?
Yeah, I mean, not to sound blasé about it, but as early as possible. And, some companies are formed with the idea that they will build something, and if it's technology, they're going to plan because Google's going to buy them. There's something they're going to structure around, mm-hmm. around that thing. So some of the folks that get in the business actually think about the payday that's out there, and that could be real fast, a couple of years, it could be 10 years, it could be 20 years, but I find companies will come in a couple different flavors. There's those that really do take it seriously and plan 3, 5, even 10 years ahead, and there's the other ones that hadn't thought of it at all, even though you might have suggested to them that they might think about it, but they call you because an unrequested letter of intent shows up and somebody wants to buy them, and it's like, well, now what?
Yeah, well, that was our case, exactly the way it happened. It was not intended, and just situation put us in that the letters came and we moved forward with it. When it's a family-run business, we hear lots of stories about family-run businesses as they make this transition either to other family members. How do you guys navigate family-owned businesses that are either selling outright or selling to other family members?
Yeah, I mean, families can be more difficult. Because of the family dynamic, I've heard fathers, if you will, say, I really want my son to take over the business, but he won't take charge. And then you go down the hall and talk to the son, it's like, Dad won't let me do anything. And so there's this huge communication thing that they have to get over. Some of the largest family-owned companies out there, and people may not realize, Amway was a family-owned business. And they had two founders who built that, and they transferred it over a succession plan to multiple generations. There are a lot of families that will do that. They need guidance of their estate planning. They need accounting, tax. They might need psychologists, business psychologists, to help them figure out how they want to navigate this thing. So some families, quite frankly, they haven't got the heirs that are interested in that business.
Right.
I've got a client right now who's a diehard manufacturing company, but, son and daughter aren't really so hip on that.
Not looking forward to that.
Right.
My father had a business, and he saw me as the person to take it over, myself or my brother, and neither one of us wanted it, and so that was always an interesting conversation in the house about carrying on the family tradition.
Right. So, the family tradition is nice. It doesn't always work. My kids didn't go anywhere close to accounting, so it's, I understand.
We've talked about selling a business. Let's talk about acquiring businesses. I mean, if we're talking about growth strategies and ways to keep sustainable growth in your business, and certainly acquisition, if you will, is a viable strategy. So there are some rules of thumb. I mean, it's a nice idea to say, I'm going to go buy a business, but I wouldn't know how to do it tomorrow. So what are some guidelines if a company is developing their long-term strategic plans that they should think about and the types of businesses they may want to acquire or even to go how to go about that process?
Well, you know, I think the first thing that you actually just used in that phrase was actually having a strategic vision of what they're trying to accomplish. Because there are companies that can perceive a vision, whether they're building a vertical relationship, which means we've got the manufacturer, the distributor, maybe down to the retailer, mm-hmm. or we've got something that is compatible businesses, maybe you're adding on product lines. It's ultimately the starter question is, where are you trying to go? And because if you don't have a plan, it's very difficult to say that I just want to go buy a business, because right. I'll step back and my first question would be, well, why? And you should be able to answer that why question.
You would think.
It's not just, you know, I take it, there are some folks that'll do it because it's pure ego to say, I bought this business or I took my company public. But the strategy is number one to figure out, because are you looking to get market share? Are you looking to expand product lines? Are you looking to go internationally, expand geographically?
Sure.
Are you looking to build something that is setting it up for its own succession plan for you? You're trying to create a value organization that somebody in turn will want to buy from you. What is your rationale?
Right.
That's the key.
And I think that's extremely important. I mean, because it is, there's so many different avenues that you can take on why you want to grow and what are the rationale, whether it's, you know, to increase volume, decrease market share, to open up new markets, add new products to your existing lines. And that gets into that strategic planning aspect. And you know, I'm a fractional CMO, and that's a lot of what I do with my clients is looking at the future, the vision, and, you know, how can we grow the business, not only organically, but through acquisition or other different strategies. So let's talk a little bit about that planning sessions. I made a statement, I think, in one of the last episodes about the annual plan.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's necessary. However, I don't think planning should be delegated to one time in a given year, right? So let's talk about your vision and what you think about and the things you write about for a strategic planning process and the annual plan.
Sure. You know, I think first off, yes, we endorse the idea of an annual retreat or strategic summit, or as one board member coined it on one of the nonprofit boards I served on, it's not a retreat. Let's call it an advance. We're supposed to be looking forward. So it's an advance session, not a retreat.
Well, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Either way you look at it, it is meant to be there to take time to step back and actually work on your business, because everybody's in the rush of the daily thing, doing what has to be done today, but without sitting back, and coming up with that plan 1, 3, 5 years out, you're not necessarily going to have the rudder in the water at the right direction to get you where you're going. So, you know, who should be in that? You know, most likely you should have a facilitator. I've done both with our firm. I've facilitated it. I've co-facilitated. I've stepped back and had a complete outsider do it. The difficult part about facilitating your own plan is you're not participating.
Right. Right.
You're trying to figure out where the questions are going to come and where the discussions are going to go. An outside facilitator who's familiar with your entity and your people can really help contain that thought process and keep you moving in a general direction. Now, doing it once a year is good, but there's a lot of things that happen on the other 364 days.
Exactly. I talk a lot about market dynamics and presentations that I give, and there's so many different aspects, which is really part of the foundation for this idea of the Business Growth Cafe. There's so many things that can influence and impact a business along the way. In those days, I would tell my clients, the day I present you the strategic plan or the business plan or advertising plan, whatever it was, the minute you say, yes, I love it, it just changed. Something happened out there that had an impact, whether it was the competition or interest rates went up, or something happened in the economy, or politics and things like that. So there's really a lot about keeping the pulse. And I find so many times in the small to medium-sized businesses, and frankly even larger businesses that I've dealt with, is that consistency of keeping a pulse on the market to help make changes and evolve those changes and incorporate those changes as the days go by to make sure you're not waiting till quarterly or whatever it happens to be to make changes to your plan. What about your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's exactly true. I think, you know, if you go back 20 years, people used to do the strategic plan and it ended up in 20, 30, 40 pages in a 3-ring notebook. And, you know, we kid a lot about that today because, you know, on day 363, knowing the meeting was in 2 days, they pulled it off the shelf, blew the dust off and try to figure out what they were supposed to have done. And we actually promulgate an idea of something we call a one-page plan, trying to make it really simple, identify a couple core key strategies that are going to have to be played out, and then really focus on those and move the needle. But you're right. What your comment is, you got to be aware of what's going on around you, because the plan sounds good today, But you have to be willing to step back and see 3 months from now, is that still where I want to go?
Right.
What progress have I made? Do I need to do a course correction? You know, change course completely? What's going on in competition, the marketplace, the industry, regulatory environment? All those things are not going to be the same a year from now. Well, that's 3 or 5 years from now, depending on how far out you're looking.
Right. So if you want to really, and I always look, try to look out 5 years and make sure next year, the first year and the second year is as solid as they can be, because as to your point, things will change. You made a comment about the one-page strategic plan, and those are always interesting because, I mean, I'm the guy that has written the 100-page plans and literally have watched my clients blow the dust off them.
I had them too.
And so as we drive and strive to make them, I'll say, thinner, not necessarily simpler, because it forces, I believe, the participants to be really focused and succinct in what they're putting on that page and really committing to it, because you can't hide it in the multiple pages that are going right on. Who in your team or the client's team, I mean, I always look at first-line managers as the kind of the participants, the people that ultimately have to execute the plan and be responsible for the plan, should be the ones contributing the plan, as opposed to senior management just creating something and pushing it down.
Well, I think that's key, because if you don't have buy-in or even contribution of ideas, it's a lot harder to sell it that this is where we're going, now help me do it. If they're involved in the planning process, it helps drive the ultimate strategy. So for us, I break it down into two broad categories. I've got my management team. Mm-hmm. We go off-site and we spend some hours going through issues that they look at from the management, which is obviously looking up and looking down on an organization. Take those ideas to the partner group, add those things on top of it, and we come up with a plan that, you know, you can show the trail that it has smatterings of everybody's ideas in there.
Okay.
The one-page plan thing, though, is that's actually something you can use with the organization. You can use it as your individual. I've done it with nonprofits. You can use it for your family. I mean, it's just a way of getting something down on one simple architected script, if you will, to show you where you want to go and have you give you a place to monitor it and see if you're making progress.
Yeah, no, I like that idea, and I'm actually working with a client right now, working on their 5-year plan, and part of it is I was thinking just the other day, you know, how do I get it simpler as I'm thinking about all the writing that needs to be done, and know that they're in the middle of all the sales cycles right now for themselves, getting time, right, it's that working on the business, not in the business, and
right,
getting people who are in the business every day to get them to step away and spend some time on the business is always very difficult. Because of your accounting and tax prep and things like that, certainly I want to look at 2019. And what are some of the things that could have an impact on the financial aspect, the profits of a business going forward that we have yet to see from 2018 and from the tax issues and certainly moving forward that the audience should be aware of?
You know, it's interesting where we sit here on the beginning of October as we go into the fourth quarter of this year. First off, we had that Christmas present last year with the new tax law, which unfortunately is simpler than it appears, because there's a lot of interpretations that have yet to be written. Mm-hmm. So as people are scrambling or beginning to plan just for what their 2018 tax burden is going to be, there are things that are still unclear in that tax act. So when the tax forms come around for 18, there may be some things that need a little bit of better understanding, but the best thing to do there is kind of keep abreast of what's happening as those things come out through conversations with your tax advisor. But, you know, 34 days from now, we've got a midterm election. Pretty rough out there on the political scene. So anything that we think is stable today may change post-election. It may make things even more difficult. We're sitting here with a 51-49 split most of the time. It could flip the other way. We've got interest rates that just went up. They will go up again. That's bound to have an impact on housing, purchasing major items like cars and that type of thing. Gas prices, today's paper talking about the $4 gas. I mean, shoot, I already paid that yesterday, so
yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure what they think is still coming. I think it's here, and that's going to have an impact. We have
with the tariffs going on right now.
Tariffs, it seems like good news yesterday with where we're getting into the upgrade or replacement for NAFTA, but we've got a lot of things out there that are just moving. You know, government regulation is unsure. Interest rates will push things in. We've got low unemployment, really low unemployment, which is great news. But that also puts a real hindrance on companies trying to grow. If you're a service business like mine, service is provided by people. And if you can't find them, it makes it real difficult to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. In the selling the business, it was a question, sure, I was going to ask. And we always look at this and looking at the strength of the brand health, when selling your business, the equity that you have and how you define the equity, the intangibles.
Right.
So what are some of those intangibles? Because I talk to companies all the time about making sure their brand is strong, they're communicating, you know, the same message is being told by everybody and all the wonderful things that go along with branding. And a lot of times they get it, but don't necessarily execute it as we get down the line. But it's so important, I think, in the evaluation of a business, if you're trying to sell it, how you're positioned within the marketplace and the strength of that mark, if you will, that right. brand.
Yeah, I mean, clearly we're talking about a lot of intangibles. Mm-hmm. And brand is one of those things. Okay, what's the value of Coca-Cola? Right? I mean, there's a huge brand number there, despite what they might have in fixed assets. But when you do look at what companies are doing, you know, do they have intellectual property? Yeah, they might have spent tens of thousands of dollars to develop an idea, get a patent or whatever that's now worth millions. And in the accounting world, that isn't showing on a balance sheet.
Right. Right.
So it's a hidden value just looking at a financial statement that a company has and is probably capitalizing on that every day in terms of how they move their product, you know, how they prevent competition because they have, you know, free reign with that patent for a number of years. Culture, we mentioned earlier. Culture is one of the things you can walk around and you get a feel for it. You can see how a company runs when you walk in the front door, you know, and so ultimately we tie these all up sometimes in a bow and say, what's the goodwill value of the business? When you're paying for the business as a buyer, you're not looking at what's the net asset on the balance sheet. Let me give you that dollar. It's that net asset number plus something else that's
right.
tying into these unrecorded intangibles of intellectual property, culture, goodwill, customer base, the distribution network I mentioned before. All these things that took time to build are now worth something
right
to somebody, and it's a lot of work for the business valuation folks out there to come up with what that is.
Yeah, exactly. And I was going to just say that was the interesting thing in going through my process. We had to go out and find somebody to do the valuation on the business and things like that, and certainly what we thought it was worth was a whole lot more than, you know, but again, it was a small business and service business, but trying to put a number on what we felt the equity was worth and the goodwill we had in the marketplace.
Well, it's tough. I find that people who haven't really studied it, they haven't gone through the formula, they haven't sold a company before, bought a company before, probably have this thought agreed to by a lot of advisors out there. If you ask the business owner what they think their company's worth, it's usually a number that's way over what the first market indicator is going to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's just personal. I mean, you built it. It's your baby, so to speak. You've got all the blood, sweat, and tears in it. Therefore, it must be worth, you know, some crazy multiple or some number that you think, hey, 20 million. And somebody comes back and says, hey, you know, I'll give you 8. And it's like, you know, it's an interesting starting point for a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there I wrote this down in my notes, a smell test that someone who's thinking about buying a business or even selling their business, is there a kind of a smell test that, hey, you're in a situation to sell it, or here's what you should look out for when you've been thinking about buying?
Well, I think if you're planning to sell or ready to sell, you know, there's things to think about. You know, are you personally ready to sell your business? Meaning, are you mentally prepared? I mean, you mentioned it before, you became the EVP when you used to be the CEO.
Right.
And so your role is going to change. If this is your exit, your role is going to change drastically. You're not going to get suited up to go to work every day. You know, so you got to deal with the other constituents at home. Like, does your wife want you around every day? And sort of the life will be different. But are you financially ready to do that? Will selling this business give you the wealth you need if this is your retirement play that you need for the rest of your, you know, expected lifespan? Is the company really ready to sell? And this is something that you can take the pre-planning time for, because, you know, we can pull some of the wasted costs out of a company that improves the bottom line. If you take a multiple on that bottom line, you know, every dollar you save is worth some multiple dollar in a valuation. When you have it a 3 to 5 years advance, you can do that. LOI today with somebody knocking at your door wanting to buy it, you don't have time to fix a lot of those things.
Right, right. So we're coming to an end here. I'm getting the pointed finger and the hook over there in the corner. So this is a question I like to ask all my guests. I mean, we're both business people. So when you think about growing your business and continue to grow your business, what sure. keeps you up at night?
You know, I think the two primary things that, you know, we face every day is personnel, and that's recruiting, retaining, and, you know, and holding on to them, you know, for long term, because that is our business. People are our inventory. And I mentioned it earlier, we're at a very low unemployment. Accountants are in demand, which is great. But accounting firms will all want the same people to be the tax advisors, auditors, et cetera. So we're all clamoring to get those people all the time. And so in a low unemployment rate like this, it is a little bit more of an employee's market. So the retention aspect of it, it becomes a bigger charge today than perhaps the finding them.
Right.
And then the other thing is just clearly the competition, because, you know, we're all out there trying to convince the client base out there that, you know, we can do something better than the next guy.
Yeah, that point of differentiation, right. And how do you position yourself? Right. I mean, that's the struggle that we all have. Thank you so much. Why don't you tell people how they can reach you and contact you?
So there's a bunch of ways. I mean, Haskell & White's website is www.hwcpa.com. Pretty simple. The firm is on LinkedIn. The firm is on Twitter. My email is my first initial last name, so wpinnell@hwcpa.com. Phone number is 949-450-6200. I'm also on LinkedIn. It's real easy. Just use my name. You'll find my face and my bio.
So lots of ways to contact you. That's fantastic. Easy. Thank you so much. First of all, thank you again for joining us today. You can find out more about me and read some of my blogs at The Ponzi Group at www.theponzigroup.com. Connect with me on LinkedIn and Facebook, and certainly you can subscribe to our show at thebusinessgrowthcafe.com, and look for us soon on your favorite podcast platform. Join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.